Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, we hear from one of my tennis buddies, Dr. Ed Schneider, talking about aging.
And I asked him, how many of you want to go and be geriatricians? None of them raised their hand. And I look at them and I said, you're all going to be geriatricians because the average age of your patient in the future is going to be over age 65, whether they're in your clinic or in your hospital or wherever you see them.
And later in the show, we talk about tennis.
It's competitive. It gets my competitive juices running.
And it's the social aspect, don't you think?
You have a wonderful backhand. Your first serve, when you get it in, is very good.
Oh, well, thanks, Ed. I'll take it. Today on Storyworthy, we hear from one of my tennis buddies, Dr. Ed Schneider. Stay close.
Hi, it's Ed Schneider, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. I'm so excited you guys are here today, whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener. Welcome to Storyworthy. You guys have tuned in on a very special episode today because today I bring you a story from one of my tennis buddies. Now, as you know, most of my guests on Storyworthy are comedians and or writers, but today we're going to hear a story from one of my tennis buddies who actually is a writer and he thinks he's a comedian. But he's here with us, Dr. Ed Schneider, and I'm so excited. In 2018, I'm going to bring you guys a story from extraordinary people that I know in my life from playing tennis with them for most of them over 15 years. When you see somebody like 3 days a week, right, like first thing in the morning generally, you know, there's no alcohol involved, the lights are bright, and you're playing a competitive sport, you definitely get to know somebody. And tennis, as you know, I've told you guys before, it kind of brings people together that otherwise might not be together, right? So it's all walks of life. People with all different careers, you know, come together for this one common thing. Anyway, you guys, there's just something about spending time, you know, with people that aren't your family and that aren't anybody that you see outside the tennis court. And today on My Tennis Buddies, you guys, I'm talking to Dr. Ed Schneider, like I said, and he brings forth the topic aging. And he knows a lot about it because Ed sent over his bio, and you guys, if the show were like 2 hours long, then maybe I could fit it in, but it's not. The show is, you know, it's a tight 40 minutes, and so I can't read the bio that he sent me, but I will tell you that he's super, super smart. I'll tell you that. He's one of my smarter friends. He's one of my academic friends. Do you know what I mean? Because you guys know I have so many creative friends because I'm friends with comedians and writers and, you know, Hollywood people, I guess you'd say. But this is one of my academic friends. And here's the bottom line. Dr. Ed Schneider is a doctor. There. That's what he is. It's right there in the title. Dr. Ed Schneider. Did I ever tell you I was going to name my child Doctor? I mean, Alabama's catchy and everything, but if I just named her Doctor or Senator. I think Alabama's catchy. You like that name, don't you?
Oh, I love that name.
Yeah.
In fact, there was a Nicolas Cage movie, I think, which starred a child called Alabama.
Alabama Whirly.
That was a great, great movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A fantastic. True romance.
One of my favorites.
One of my favorites as well. Anyway, so Dr. Ed Schneider, like I said, he's a doctor, and he works in gerontology, and that's why he knows about our topic today, aging. Gerontology is something I never even thought of. Like, I didn't even think it was a thing. I thought you just get old and we're done. But you can actually study it, and you can learn about it, and you can educate others. And I happen to have a lot of friends who were in that, would you call it the age bracket, a gerontology age bracket? Could you call it that?
Not really. Let me talk to you about that.
Okay. Not yet. I want to hear about it. Don't get me wrong. But I also am still going through your bio a little bit. It's really long. Listen, recently, Ed received his chair in gerontology to acknowledge his contributions to the field of gerontology at USC. You guys, that's a big deal. That, I know, is a big deal. First, when he told me he got a chair, I thought, you know, why is he talking to me about his furniture? Like, I don't, that's nice, Ed. I didn't know until we all connected it that it's actually quite a big deal. And Ed is also a sought-after lecturer and has been interviewed by numerous media outlets, including Larry King Live. I love Larry King. Speaking of older people, I adore Larry King. He's definitely one of my boyfriends. He's also been interviewed by Good Morning America, CNN, CBS, NBC, BBC. And there's so many letters involved. He's also had his stories printed in Forbes, Newsweek, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal. If it's in print, Ed Schneider has been there. And right now he lives here in Los Angeles. He's still a professor. He's still working all the time. But every couple of days he takes an hour out of his life and he plays tennis with me. So that I appreciate. And before we get to Ed's story, I did want to remind you guys to follow me on Twitter. Would you do that? That's not a big deal. At Storyworthy. And then also check out storyworthypodcast.com because that's the website I put my time into. You guys know that, right? And then, of course, follow Storyworthy on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, if you love great storytelling, and I know you do, listen to LA Theater Works podcast on Wondery. They stage and record plays live in performance with actors in front of mics and add sound effects and music so it becomes a completely immersive audio experience. And they've been doing it a long time and have recorded over 500 plays. LA Theater Works' recent podcasts include Top Secret, The Battle for the Pentagon Papers, about the notorious leaked documents, Steel Magnolias, the story of six friends at a beauty salon, and Things You Shouldn't Say Past Midnight, which is a wild sex comedy that's definitely not safe for work. And that's just a few of their stories. So if you're an audio drama fan, listen to LA Theater Works. They bring live and recorded theater to the world, and they're right here on Wondery.
All right, you guys, without further ado, wherever you are, put your hands together for Dr. Ed Schneider.
Okay, the first thing I want to tell you is that my daughter doesn't consider me funny at all. Okay, so how did I get into a field with this crazy name? Gerontology. I actually had letters addressed to me as the dean of dermatology. People still don't quite understand what gerontology is. Gerontology is the study of aging, including biological aspects. Why do we age? Sociological aspects of aging. Where should we live? Should we live in a retirement community? Should we stay integrated in our current community? Psychological aspects of aging. A lot of people, as they get older, have issues of depression. Is it new? Is it the old depression they had just taken into old age? Or is it a new depression? And there are clinical issues related to gerontology. We call this field geriatrics. It's the clinical specialty of aging. How old are you when you're a geriatric patient? What's the age?
89.
No. No, it's not 89, it's not 65, it's not 78. It's when your doctor, your primary care doctor, your internist, your family medicine doctor, your general practitioner sees you and you have too many diseases. You're taking too many medications. You have too many problems. He looks at you and says, you're a geriatric patient.
Really?
That's when geriatrics begins. That's the age. So there's no age. I've seen patients who are in their late 50s. I've seen patients over age 100. So we cover all aspects of aging. Okay, so the question you asked me once upon a time was, Ed, you're a reasonable guy. How did you get in this crazy field? Why did you choose to study old people? How did it begin? It began when I was young. I was raised in my grandparents' house. It was a six-family house in Brooklyn. My grandparents lived on the first floor. My uncle lived on the first floor. My parents lived on the second floor. It was one big family. When I interacted with my grandparents, they were happy people. They were independent people. They were productive people. I love them. Then I went off to college. Okay, so now I'm off to medical school. I become an intern and resident. And how do my fellow interns and residents and medical students refer to old people? As gomers. Ed, you don't want to take care of that gomer. And I looked at that person as an old person, like my grandparents. I love my grandparents. I would never call them derogatory names. It was the bias of the time. The doctors in my training period, they didn't want to take care of old people. They wanted to take care of young people. And that bias is still present in this country. But every week, I meet with a group of medical students from the Keck School of Medicine, and I ask them, how many of you want to go and be geriatricians? None of them raised their hand. And I look at them and I say, you're all going to be geriatricians because the average age of your patient in the future is going to be over age 65, whether they're in your clinic or in your hospital or wherever you see them. And then I tell them that they're going into fields for sissies. I mean, how much intellectual power do you need to take care of a 40-year-old person who has one complaint that you can treat successfully and give them one medication? The real intellectual challenge is taking care of someone who has a dozen complaints, taking 15 medications, having 15 different diseases. That's a real challenge. That's a real detective story. So I think gerontology, geriatrics are very exciting fields. Okay, so I saw this bias in medical school and as my internship, and then I started my training in medical genetics, which was a traditional field at that time, and I went to a conference on aging. One of my friends said, hey, this is an interesting field. Why don't you go to this conference on aging? Okay, so I went to this meeting at the University of California at Santa Cruz. Beautiful campus, just gorgeous. The weather was superb. And the people would get up and give talks on aging. One distinguished professor, and I don't know how distinguished he was after I heard him talk, spent the whole time talking about the fact that aging was due to free radicals. Free radicals are not students at Berkeley. They're highly reactive biochemicals that interact with your cell membrane, your cell protein, and your cell DNA and cause damage. And he felt that these free radicals, and by the way, how do you get a free radical? What you do is you breathe in air, eat your food. And when you're combusting the food, besides all the positive things that are released, you also release free radicals. These are highly reactive biochemicals interacting with your cell membrane, cell DNA, and other parts of your cells, cause damage. So he said everything, all aging is caused by free radicals. He didn't show a shred of data to support this claim. So he knows what causes aging, but he can't prove it in any way, shape, or form. Then another speaker would get up, and he would say, aging is caused by genetics. Your genes determine your aging. Again, no data to support it. And it would go on all the time. Someone would say, aging is due to collagen cross-linking. Because you were born with collagen, and your collagen over time cross-links with other collagen, and this rigidity causes aging. Well, you don't grow old just because you grow rigid. There are other things happening. So I was getting tired of hearing this, and I can't sit still in a meeting. I have ADHD, and I whispered to this British guy next to me that this was all garbage. I think I said something a little stronger than that. And he turned to me and said, Ed, come outside and I'll show you a book that I'm writing. So the two of us left, and we went to the University of California at Santa Cruz's stadium. And at the stadium, there were some cheerleaders having a summer workshop. So it was wonderful to watch. Enjoyed it thoroughly. And he showed me the galley proofs of book he was writing. And I was amazed. I was sure this book was going to be an incredible bestseller. What it was an adult treatment of sex. It was the first book that treated sex in an adult way, with pictures and illustrations. The book was The Joy of Sex. And the person I was talking to was Alex Comfort, who besides being the author of this best-selling book that sold 3.5 million copies, was England's leading gerontologist. And he said to me, Ed, I can't get you involved in this book. It's too late now because it's already ready for being published. But I want you to consider going into this field because it needs bright young people like you. If you can do something good in this field, you will change the field. You will make a real impact. So I thought about that for a while, and I went to another aging meeting and wound up with two job offers. One was to work in a laboratory on aging in Baltimore, and the second was to work at the University of California in Los Angeles in the field of medical genetics where I had trained. And all of my colleagues urged me to go to UCLA. Great academic institution in California, which I loved. Why do you want to go to the East Coast again? It's where you were born. That's where you grew up. But I thought, wow, what Alex said was true. This is a new field. This is a field of the future. So I want to try it. So I went off to Baltimore to do research. Here I was off to Baltimore for the coldest winter on record, starting to regret perhaps my turning down of a job at UCLA where I would have had a house in Palos Verdes overlooking the Pacific Ocean and being here in Baltimore with its row houses. And it's before the Inner Harbor, by the way. And I said to myself, I want to have fun. And so did two things. One, I started racing sailboats on the Chesapeake Bay, which I love to do. And the second thing was I filled my laboratory up with students from Johns Hopkins. And we had a ball At one point, I had 11 students from Hopkins in my laboratory, and we were doing research on aging that was at the forefront of the field and publishing in great journals and doing extremely well. The other thing that influenced me in picking aging over picking medical genetics was the stories of my two grandparents. So let's go back now. I'm an intern. New York Hospital, Cornell Medical Center, one of the most prestigious places in the East Coast. My mother calls me up. I'm working in the emergency room. She says, "Your grandpa's sick," and she describes the symptoms. It was easy. He had pulmonary edema, which is heart failure. I told her what to do to wrap his arms and legs with belts and bring him immediately to the emergency room of this best hospital on the East Coast. So my grandfather came in, easy as can be to treat him, which I did. And then I sent him upstairs to the teaching ward, not just a regular ward, the teaching ward, the cream of the cream, the best of the best at Cornell New York Hospital. And on duty that night was my friend, Tony Fauci, a very famous clinician today, very famous researcher, then a very good clinician, top of his class at Cornell. When I finished my shift, I went upstairs to see my grandfather. He was lying down flat in bed, unconscious. I went over to Tony. I said, "What have you done to my grandfather? If he's at risk for a heart attack, he should be sitting up. If he had heart failure, he should be sitting up in bed and not out cold." And Tony said, "Let me tell you what happened." When he came upstairs, we treated him as any person at risk of a heart attack, and we had him on strict bed rest. In those days, what was strict bed rest was you never left the bed for a week. So you had to go to the bathroom, we gave you a urinal. You had to poop, we gave you a commode. So my grandfather had to go, they gave him a urinal. He had never been in a hospital before. There was no way he was going to use that urinal. So he got out of bed to go to the bathroom. So they gave him a shot of phenobarbital to sedate him, to make him more easy to deal with. Well, today we know that phenobarbital in old people can make them even more excited. They didn't know that then. So my grandfather got more agitated. So what did they do? They gave him a shot of Valium.
Valium?
Valium. Valium, Valium. I'm a Jew from Brooklyn, and I pronounce things in a different way. Okay, so Valium is an interesting drug in an old person. Now we know that in someone 80 years old, like my grandfather, Valium has a half-life of 90 hours. What does that mean? What does a half-life mean? It means how much time it takes for half the drug to leave the body. So when they give you a dose of 5 or 10 milligrams of Valium, 10% of it will leave your body in the next 24 hours. Most of it's going to stay aboard. So my grandfather was zonked, and that's why he was laying out flat in bed. So I went over to Tony, and I said to Tony, "What should we do?" We talked for a while. We came up with a solution. We discharged my grandfather against medical advice. In those days, you had to sign papers. So we signed all the papers to discharge him. I called my mother up. We sent him home, and he never again went back to a hospital. He had one day in his life in a hospital, and that was the day. That was my experience with old people. Old people got in trouble in the hands of doctors.
So that's a really interesting story because obviously it's very personal.
Yes, very personal.
So you saw people in the hospital getting screwed.
Well, not being taken care of properly. And
you could see that with your own eyes.
Yes.
But couldn't other people see that? What was going on?
This was in the 1960s. At this point, almost no one was being trained in geriatrics or gerontology. So no one knew the things that I just told you. We didn't know much about drugs and their changes in older people.
That's so interesting. So you really got in like from the bottom up, as it were, in a new field.
I was very fortunate to enter this field at the very, very beginning.
So you're telling me before you entered the field, there were no courses in gerontology? You couldn't major in gerontology?
Yes, the field of gerontology began in the mid-60s. It began about the same time that Medicare and Medicaid came in.
Thank you, Democrats.
Yes, but the whole field of gerontology started slowly in the 60s. It took a long time for people to understand the real need of taking care of older individuals. The kickstart came more recently because people began to recognize the baby boomers are getting old. And the baby boomers are going to need special care, and no one was prepared.
I think it's fascinating. Now, you know, you've taken me to a couple of football games down at USC, and I see the School of Gerontology, the building there. You have a great parking place. And I see all the kids in the gerontology department. You've introduced me to them. They're tailgating, you know, having beers. They love you. They love you. They call you Dean Ed. They're toasting their Coors Lights to you, shotgunning beers. It's fabulous. But those kids, do you see, like, the light in their eye that you felt you had when you went into the school? Like, in other words, how are kids choosing now to go into gerontology?
Well, it's wonderful. I am very fortunate to have a job where I work on a college campus. I teach young people. We have over 600 students in our school.
Wow.
Studying gerontology. And I feel very, very good that I've helped some of these students develop into careers in the field of aging. And it's very exciting to see our students 5, 10, 15, even 40 years later, and what they're doing and how they're making an impact on the lives of older Americans.
Because the goal, of course, is longevity. Is that the idea?
No, the goal is not longevity. A lot of people think it is, but it's not. Our goal is to have people age well, mm-hmm. to live well, to postpone disability, disease, and dependency. That's our goal of gerontology. Put it off as long as possible. Be able to play tennis with you as long as possible. Right. That's our goal.
Right. And so do you miss the sailing that you used to do?
I traded my sailboat in for three kids and golf and tennis, basically. It's hard to sail the way I did on the East Coast. What I did is I raced my own boat for approximately a year or two, and then I got the best job in the world that you don't get paid for, which is being a coach at the Naval Academy. So I taught the midshipmen at the Naval Academy how to race sailboats. That was my job.
Wow. Why do they have to learn that?
It's fun because it's hard enough, the routine they have every day, and they obviously love ships, and here's a way to get out that energy.
That's so interesting. So it's like an extracurricular activity they can do when they're in the Navy.
It's also an intercollegiate sport. So while Navy was, when I was there, was never number one in football or basketball or volleyball, we were number one in sailboat racing.
See, I didn't know that about you. How about that? How did I not know that you were a coach of sailboat racing?
I give up. You never asked.
That is extraordinary. Okay, so let's talk about tennis and aging and how those two things work together.
Well, I want to make it clear that I'm a really bad tennis player.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, no, I knew you wouldn't disagree with that one.
No, you're a great tennis player. Ed Schneider, folks, he's the lobber. And you can't out-lob the lobber because he's got this shot that is going to hit it so high in the air, probably 20, 25 feet in the air. It's going to bounce. And then it's going to come down on the baseline, on your baseline. And then you're going to have to start backing up, backing up, backing up until you hit the fence. And then maybe you're going to touch that ball and return it. But you may not. Or he does that. He loves so that you get the sun in your eyes. It's so immature. It's so immature.
It's not immature. It's competitive, Christine.
You are so competitive.
I'm playing with people who are 2, 3, and 4 decades younger than me. They're faster. They're younger. They're stronger. So how do I stay competitive? How do I beat these folks? You've got to develop new strategies. And that's the key to aging successfully.
Well, why don't I just drop shot everything on you then?
You try, but you don't care. Unfortunately, I'm also fast.
Hey, listen, what do you think my best shot is?
You have a wonderful backhand.
Backhand. Interesting. Backhand. Tony Tanner said it was my serve.
Yes. Your first serve when you get it in is very good.
Yeah, but I'm only at like 300% there. Do you say it like that?
If you had 300%, you would be awesome.
What do they say in baseball? He's batting
300%.
300.
If you batted 300% in your serve, it'd be okay.
No way. What do they say in golf? Like he hits a 500 or what's the term in golf? Not golf, baseball. What's the term in baseball?
There's a batting average. Your batting serving average would be probably would be 250 or 300.
That's what I was getting at.
Okay, I'll buy that.
Okay, so talk about aging in tennis. Let's hear it.
Okay, well, first of all, as you get older, except if your name is Hank Gluck or Henry Gluck, you get slower, you get less strong, your serve is not as fast. But the most important thing is your balance starts to suck.
Interesting.
So, for example, I used to be easy for me to turn around and run back for a lob, and now I do it with great care. Mm. And that's why Christine wins some of the games against me, is she lobs it over my head. That's the only way she wins.
Who's Henry Gluck?
Henry Gluck is a great friend of mine. He is a very successful gentleman. He was the chairman of Caesar's World and brought it back from bankruptcy. He's the one who developed the mall there. But he is a phenomenal tennis player and plays and beats people who are four decades younger than him. I'm in awe of Henry.
Yeah, interesting. Okay.
So you can do that. It's possible.
Yeah, okay. But look, what about aging in tennis and moving and people, you know, obviously as you age, you got to exercise. I mean, it's all about diet and exercise at the end of the day, right?
Well, this is fascinating. The key to successful aging by far is exercising. You can smoke, but you can substantially reduce your risk by exercising. You can be overweight, and again, you can substantially lower your risk with exercise. In fact, older people who are overweight, okay, and exercise do better than people who are normal weight and don't exercise.
Interesting.
So exercise is the key.
So in other words, it's not your size. It's that you get your body moving, because if you think about it, biologically, you just want all those organs and everything to work and to move. You don't want things to like atrophy laying on the couch with a bag of Doritos.
Well, it's a whole bunch of research has shown that exercise reduces your risk of a number of diseases. It reduces your risk of certain cancers, like breast cancer. It reduces your risk by far of a heart attack. It reduces your risk of a stroke. It reduces your risk of diabetes so much that if you're pre-diabetic, if a doctor comes up to you and says, you are pre-diabetic and you're going to develop diabetes, if you exercise and watch your waist, you can prevent the development of that disease.
Wow.
It also helps with high blood pressure. It helps you with sleep. It helps you with depression. It helps you with so many different things.
And so for you, tennis, you chose tennis. I know you golf as well, but you traded in sailing. And now, you know, how did you choose tennis specifically?
Because I'm so competitive.
Yeah.
And I hate exercising for exercising's sake. I have upstairs a elliptical. And so when I can't play tennis or do an activity, I use the elliptical. But I much prefer tennis to the elliptical because it's competitive. It gets my competitive juices running.
And it's the social aspect, don't you think?
Yes, yes.
It's super social. And you heard what I was saying earlier, how you meet people with all different backgrounds, because you and I would probably not otherwise be friends.
That's correct. And also golf is the same way too. I'm talking about golf. When you walk the course and don't take the cart is the way to go in golf.
But don't you think golf is too much of a time commitment? I mean, what... That's like 3 hours of your day. If you play 18, 4 hours.
You've got to play golf with someone you really like.
You got to be retired.
No, you got to play golf with someone you really enjoy being with for 4 hours.
Yeah, I guess so.
And it's also a beautiful walk. You know, according to Mark Twain, golf is a beautiful walk ruined. And I look at it as a beautiful walk with a little competitive nature added to it.
I like golf as well. Just par three. I don't think I could do the four-hour time commitment, at least not now. I'm too nervous. I have too many things to do, and I need to be on my computer, not just my phone. I need to be fully at Ground Central, I call it. But the thing with tennis, don't you find it is very meditating to me to hit the ball. Just look at the ball and hit it. Like, it grounds you in that you have to be present because that ball is coming back at you. You have to connect with that person across the net on some level. You need them and they need you. And it's like you do this little dance together.
No, that's an interesting way of looking at it. I always considered that golf was more social than tennis because the person in tennis is on the other side of the net, whereas you're walking with this person in golf and talking to them in between holes and in between shots.
Right, but you can also just kind of veg out while you're walking between holes because it's such a slow-moving game. There's only a tiny bit of excitement in between these long stretches of walking.
Sounds like baseball.
I mean, tennis, it just keeps on coming. To me, it's like tennis is more rapid fire, and I just find more excitement in it.
So I always thought, I would play tennis since I was younger, never played well, and I thought, hey, I'll take up golf when I get old. But what happened is I had some injuries, and I couldn't play tennis for a year or so.
I see.
And that's why I went more over to golf. You can play it without having your total body in shape the way you need to do if you're playing tennis.
Interesting. All right, so we're going to wrap it up in a second, but let me ask you this. What is in your tennis bag?
Tennis balls and a tennis racket, and my sunglasses and my sunscreen, and that's about it.
A couple of bucks, no?
Nope.
No money. All right. Well, not the, you know, I'm just curious.
Well, now I know where to get your couple of bucks, Christine. Anybody want Christine's money, all they have to do.
I always have a couple of bucks because when we play doubles, it's $4. And I always bring a five. Okay. And so you get the one back and then they develop. And when you get four of them, guess what? Ding, ding, free Saturday.
Okay, so if anybody needs an extra dollar or two.
You used to book the Saturday gig, and now you're not. Talk about that.
Well,
there's politics involved, isn't there?
It's not politics. It's a question of you don't want to do anything additional in your life that frustrates you. So I love playing tennis on Saturday mornings, and for years I scheduled it, and it worked out pretty well.
And to schedule it means you have to be part of the Los Angeles tennis whatever, the city parks.
You pay an exorbitant, I think it's $15 for 3 years registration.
I think it's like 20, I'm not sure.
Okay, so they've updated, Christine. So you pay this exorbitant amount of money, and that allows you to reserve a court anytime, but mostly weekends and late afternoons. So I used to reserve the court a week in advance, religiously, for Saturday morning, 8 to 10, and be a great way to start my weekend.
Wonderful.
And we had no problems until the last year or so, when a couple of members of the group started calling me like on Friday morning and say, oh, I can't make it. And then I had to scramble.
And they're not replacing themselves. If they replace themselves, then it's not a big deal. But you need four. I mean, that's the key.
Yes, and that's a problem. I mean, my life is kind of full. And to spend all this time trying to replace someone on a Friday afternoon when everybody has plans for the weekend, I decided after about 3 or 4 weeks of doing this that it wasn't worth it anymore, so I don't schedule anymore to play.
Okay, how about we do this? Listen, let's make a deal. You give me your card number, because my card expired. Now, of course, yes, I could spend the $20 and get my own card, but why would I do that? You give me your number, and I'll start trying to schedule that Saturday morning, because I know Tall is always in, except for when he cancels. No, listen, I think now that we've not played tennis in the last couple of Saturdays, people are feeling the impact, the sadness, the longing, and the grieving. And I think I could rally this thing, as it were.
Now, wait a second. You want me to give you a card that I spent $20
for? That's exactly right. That's exactly
without
right.
Charging you anything
That's
for that
exactly
card.
Right.
And you're going to use my information.
That's exactly right.
Now, does that mean that I have to check my bank account and my credit card balances after that?
I don't think that card is tied to those things.
Okay. I just wondered. I was just a little worried that you'd be starting to empty my bank account out.
Listen, thank you so much for sharing your story about gerontology, because it is fascinating. By the way, I didn't know the word clinician is the same as doctor. Is that true?
No, because clinicians can also be nurses, nurse practitioners, pharmacists. A whole bunch of people can be clinicians.
No, I didn't know that. Interesting. The free radical speech, that was interesting. I didn't know anything about that.
I have a whole nother spiel on that.
I bet you do, man. That's why you have the doctor part in front of your name. You have ADHD for real, or are you just saying that?
No, I have very serious ADHD, and I also appreciate all the listeners who've listened to this blog. If they run across my daughter, Claire Schneider, please tell her that you heard me and that I also wasn't funny, okay?
It's not a blog. It's a podcast.
Okay.
You're so funny. I also never heard the word geriatrician or something. Yeah?
A geriatrician is a doctor who specializes in taking care of people who are older.
My dad, by the way, who would have loved you. You never met my dad, did you?
I did.
You did meet Jack.
I did meet Jack.
Good.
Played tennis with Jack.
Oh, good. I guess I'm just spacing it out. I know he met Tony and Betty and David.
Saturday morning, he came up once.
Good.
And he played.
Oh, I'm so glad. Well, he always... he really liked his heart doctor, his cardiologist. He just had such a relationship with this guy. And I told my dad, probably because like he has held your heart in his hands or something. I don't know.
I hope not.
Something.
I really hope not.
Well, no, my dad's had several heart attacks in his life.
I know, but if he held his heart in his hand, he'd have serious problems.
Well, he did at one point when he had a, you know, he like died on the table during surgery. He died on the table, and they had to like massage his heart to get it going again.
But that would be a cardiac surgeon, wouldn't it?
I don't know what it was, man. Yeah. Why would I know these things? Why would I know the name of the surgeon?
Because I gave you an honorary MD degree a long time ago, and you didn't appreciate it then. You don't appreciate it now. I don't know.
I want to wear that robe. How do you get one of the robes?
Just buy it. It costs about $25. You go to a store. You go to one of these medical supply stores, and you buy a white jacket.
You crack me up. All right, you guys. I got to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank you so much for joining us on this very special episode of Storyworthy, My Tennis Buddies. I'll bring you another true story from one of my tennis buddies next month. Meantime, you guys, is there anywhere to follow you? EdSchneider.com. See, that's the thing. You guys get over 65, 70 years old, and you don't want websites.
No, there's a good reason for it.
There's a good reason for it? Yeah, is it a stalker?
Can't tell you.
This is the best part of the show. Okay. Is it because of a stalker?
Well, now that you mention it. There are a number of Hollywood actresses that continue to follow me. It's really embarrassing.
All right, you guys. I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media. Hey, what you do is you tell me you liked Ed's story. Follow me on Twitter, @StoryReady, and I'll tell him the next time I see him on the courts. All right, you guys, I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and the entire Wondery team. And on behalf of the very talented and fantastic Ed Schneider, thank you so much.
But don't tell my daughter.
My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.